It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A federal judge has ruled the NCAA cannot stop players from selling the rights to their names, images, and likenesses, striking down NCAA regulations that prohibit players from getting anything other than scholarships and the cost of attendance at schools. I'm joined now by Post-Gazette reporter Brady McCullough, who covered this case as it unfolded in an Oakland, California courtroom this summer. Brady McCullough, welcome back to the program.
Hey, great to be here, Paul.
Recap the case here that was brought by former UCLA basketball star Ed O'Bann, and just so people that might have missed when you were here the last time and maybe weren't following this, just so that they're clued into exactly what was going on here to set this up.
Yeah, I'll try to be brief with the recap here so we can move on. But basically, Ed O'Bannon was a star college basketball player at UCLA in the mid-90s, and he noticed in sometime about 10 years later, he's retired, he's selling cars in Las Vegas for a living and kind of an everyman, and he notices that at a friend's house, his kid is playing a college basketball video game made by EA Sports and obviously licensed by the NCAA and conferences and schools, that they are using a classic UCLA basketball team in the video game from the 95 Bruins. And there's a number 31 who shoots left-handed and is about the same size and same look as Ed O'Bannon. And Ed O'Bannon goes, gosh, that's is basically me, and yet I'm not getting any money out of this. And that kind of starts his mind going, and he combines with a guy by the name of Western Pennsylvania guy by the name of Sonny Vaccaro, who became kind of like a shoe marketing wizard, kind of broke open shoe contracts with guys like Michael Jordan, all college basketball coaches in the 80s. Sonny, you know, wants to kind of, he's on this crusade against the NCAA, and he combines with Ed O'Bannon and gets a, you know, great attorney by the name of Michael Hausfeld together. And they sue the NCAA for what they call and what is called names, images, and likenesses, the use of those images in a video game or the replay of classic games on ESPN Classic, all these things that happen over time that the NCAA is allowed to basically continue making money off of players long after their careers are over. And then the case just gets bigger and bigger as it goes over 5 years in the courts and different filings and changes to it. And it becomes a class action suit that affects basically all current and future college athletes in major football and major college football and college basketball. It's an antitrust suit, basically arguing that the NCAA by setting the cost at zero of a player's name, image, and likeness, is basically committing an antitrust violation and limiting competition in the marketplace. So that's kind of a very quick sum up of what the case is about.
Well, and that certainly sums it up. And so what you have is the NCAA making a lot of money off the names, images, and likenesses of players, but not allowing those players to share in any of the enormous profit that comes from selling the rights to these images, to these players, to their schools and the uniforms and the colors and all of that.
And that's right. And the biggest thing that came out of the ruling, and it was a big point of issue in court in California during the trial, was do TV broadcasts, live TV broadcasts of games, do they factor into this? Is there a market for NILs, as the names, images, and likenesses are called? Is there a market for that in live TV broadcasts? And, of course, the plaintiffs, the players, attorneys were arguing in many different ways that, of course, you cannot broadcast a live game without the players' names and certainly their images. And the NCAA is arguing with their attorneys and their witnesses that, no, the TV networks are paying for access to the facilities that the game is played, which was kind of nonsense. Because, yeah, you can't have a broadcast without these players' names and likenesses. And the judge ends up deciding in this ruling that, yes, TV market, live TV broadcasts are a part of this and that there is a market for the NILs And so that's where a lot of this money is eventually going to come from in this, and later on as this ruling plays out.
And the judge certainly could have looked at how networks promote the games. They show the players in action and, you know, tell the audience, tease them that, you know, if it's the 1995 Bruins, you know, see Ed O'Bannon lead his Bruins, you know, against the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. That kind of thing would be proof of that. How did the judge in this case arrive at this decision?
Well, I think that the main thing that she was looking at in this particular decision was this antitrust issue. You know, it was kind of crazy being in this courtroom, and I'm a college sports fan, and I follow it on that level, but then seeing it boiled down to the economics, and is this an antitrust violation? Does it limit competition? Does it violate the Sherman Act? And the judge, from looking at all the evidence, decided that, yes, the NCAA has been functioning like a cartel. It is actually used as an example of a cartel in an economics, a very popular microeconomics textbook. And I think that there was enough evidence for her to decide that this is a classic cartel. This is a situation where they have conspired with conferences and schools to limit the price of an item at $0. These NILs, these players sign over these NILs every year at the beginning of every season. And for years, these players just signed what was in front of them. They didn't know what they were doing. And now there's going to be, I'm still curious how much the current players are really even paying attention to this. But it's future players, future generations that will have the benefit of getting what the judge refers to. She didn't go all the way with it. She didn't let it just go totally free market. She's allowing the NCAA to cap this amount that they can get, a limited share, as she put it in her ruling, of what they're bringing in through their use of their names, images, and likenesses.
And yet, despite that, as you say, Judge Wilkin is not exactly blowing up the system here, but the NCAA is going to appeal. And they're saying their argument, and I believe I remember reading your chronicling of the argument that the NCAA was using, is that this will destroy the amateurism and therefore the purity of the college sport. So, I mean, clearly the judge was not necessarily buying that argument, but can the NCAA get anywhere with an appeal based on that argument?
I don't think so. The judge, you know, has made it clear from the beginning, Judge Wilkin, of course, she won't hear any appeal. You know, that'll be a different judge, but she certainly made her point all along that the word amateur, you know, and then the idea of amateurism, quote unquote, is not going to get them very far with her. And it didn't. And they continued to argue it and argue it and argue it. And I think a lot of people that I spoke with out there felt they were doing that, this idea that the NCAA needed an amateur model, quote unquote, to survive, to separate itself from professional sports and have its own kind of marketplace that's separate from professional sports. You know, that they were doing it almost to set up their appeals, that they were kind of covering, they were putting a lot of stuff on the record to set up an appeals process. And I think they're going to continue to argue that stuff, but I also think that it's going to be futile based on the judge saying, hey, the NCAA's definition of amateurism is been changing constantly over the years. And another example of that is what's going on right now with the Power Five conferences, the Big
Right.
Five, Power Five, whatever you want to call them, now getting more autonomy to give more student-athlete benefits, which is another example of the NCAA just changing what its view of amateurism is based on whatever it thinks it needs to survive and keep, you know, its, quote-unquote, as you say, this idea that it's this pure, more pure product than a professional sport. They need to keep arguing that because they don't have much to stand on. It's these future litigation, all this stuff keeps coming up. It's huge that now people going against the NCAA in future cases are going to have this ruling as precedent that, you know, that a federal judge was not at all swayed by the ideas of amateurism in college sports.
Brady McCullough of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who has been covering the case brought by Ed O'Bannon, former UCLA basketball star, over the rights of players to use their name, images, and likenesses, college players, that NCAA regulation now struck down. And Brady McCullough joining us by phone. Thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh and following up on this story. We appreciate you and your coverage of it.
Hey, well, it's great to be on, and anything else, anything you need in the future, let me know.
Thank you, Brady. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.